Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this is the second talk of the Range Retreat of 2016. And the talk I gave last week, I always try and link all these talks together, was a very, I thought, a very powerful indication of what we're doing here, and especially that how it informs the way that we meditate. Pointing out the danger of encouraging things like will. Again, as Ajahn Chah would always tell me, one of those teachings which was drummed into me again and again and again was, we meditate to let go of things, not to attain things. You go into trying to attain things or get things, that just encourages the will. And with it comes a greater, more solid sense of self, of who you think you are. And with it, those attainments give rise to pride. And you can see that a great example of that in the time of the Buddha was Venerable Devadatta, the Buddha's cousin, who struggled and strived, and he had what he thought were attainments. And because he looked at them as attainments, he attached his sense of self to what he'd experienced, and that was the cause of the downfall of Devadatta. And these aren't attainments. These are stages of letting go, stages of disappearance. And all the greatest meditations you'll ever have, if you can look at them afterwards, reflect upon them and gain insight from them, they are measured not by how much is there during the attainments, or the experience rather, but measured by what is missing, how much has gone, how much has disappeared. So the more that's disappeared, the deeper the meditation. So if you look at the meditation path like that as a disappearance, and if you are going to measure at all, you measure by how much is not there, rather than how much actually you've got and attained. If you go this other way of disappearance, letting go, stillness, then you're getting onto a good path. So this is why I gave that talk last week. 1 week has gone past, and of course last week's talk was just the very first day of our retreat. So 7 days have gone past. Still, there's always some little work, some little disturbances which go on in any monastery. But hopefully that many of you, never all of you, but many of you are settling down into the Range Retreat routine, where there is a lot of opportunity for solitude. And by solitude, doesn't matter where you're staying, there is still many places around these compounds here where you can just find a quiet place to sit and meditate. And if not in your room, no, in the halls, your room, like my room, can be a cave. You can close the windows, close the doors, try and be calm and quiet if you're staying in a cottage with other people. So it does become your little cave. A place of solitude, because when you find that solitude, that physical solitude, then you have an opportunity to put all of your awareness on developing stillness rather than having to deal with all this other stuff, you know, from people around you. So we have that solitude. Please make the best of it. And while you are developing the stillness, is also the tiredness you'll have to go through. Like certainly for myself, always so many things I have to do, going through a bit of tiredness the last week. But even though the last week I have been doing more than most, still I've had plenty of time to sit in my cave and have the opportunity for some peace and to feel, to see energies coming back into the mind, the body becoming stronger, simply because you have the opportunity to give the body some rest. That makes the body stronger, but the mind some rest, which is the most important part of this. It's all right to stay in your room and not having to do any work, not having to do much physical activity, but that only just makes the body a little bit stronger. What's more important is whether you can give your mind some rest. Because people's minds, they go thinking and worrying and planning and doing so much. Like the Buddha used to say, like the simile of an anthill, a flame during the day and smoking at night time. In other words, never cool, never still, never peaceful. And this is one of the reasons why people get tired mentally, and also why people get grumpy and angry. It's all the grumpiness and anger are all reinforced strongly by mental tiredness. I notice that myself. If I have a good meditation, you come out and you're just all bubbly. And you monks, you should know by now, many of you are smart. You can ask me anything and I will say yes, I'd have had a good meditation. The most stupid of things, because you're just so much energy, it's happiness and positivity. But if you're really tired because people have been talking to you and you've had to use your brain, you haven't had in much silence and solitude, of course I notice my mind is much tireder. And when it's more tired, it's more likely to get grumpy and to say, no, no way, or whatever. Simply because it's the factor of the energies of the mind. So I've noticed in the last few days the energies of the mind starting to increase. More happiness, more joy coming up. And of course, what I've often been telling you, with that increased mental energy, because you're resting your brain, comes stronger mindfulness. The awareness becomes much sharper with the happiness. Now this is really important, because if you are going to be practicing meditation and getting some depth in meditation, you have to develop that mindfulness first of all. Otherwise, what many people do when they start meditating, they sit down, yes, a nice quiet place, they got the cushions, they got the blankets or the aircon if they're too hot, and they can find physical comfort pretty easy, but what do they do next? Their body can get rid of a bit of a sickness, take an aspirin if you've got stomach ache or a headache. You can find a nice comfortable place if you can't even sit down. You can lie down and get some freedom from bodily aches and pains. That is not that hard to do, to get some bodily tranquility, the bodily rest, bodily ease. But then to actually to start working with the mind. Of course, people are usually start, when they come, especially those of you who just come from Indonesia, you'll start with a mind which is tired. So the only way that you think that you can meditate is to put some will to control the mind. Yes, it does give you quick results. If you really want to, you can watch the breath. In some monasteries, they would stand behind you with a stick, and if you lost your mindfulness and started nodding, you would get hit on the back with that stick. We do not do that here, because it's against the law, and I would go to jail. More than that, some of you are bigger than I am, and if I hit you, you'll grab that stick and hit me back. This is Australia. They don't have the same respect that they do in Asia. So you can't do that sort of stuff in a place like in the West. So, and it's also, it doesn't work anyway, using such force. Now, if you want to do something like watching the breath, you can use force, but it does not work. It makes you tense. Instead, you have to have some patience to allow your mind to rest. Yeah, you fall asleep. Yeah, you get dull. Go through that. Make peace with it. Be kind to it. Open the door of your heart to your dullness. That is an important teaching. Year after year after year, I would fight my dullness. And what would happen? It would just keep on going as dull and dull and dull. And absolutely stupid, should have listened to my teacher, but we always think we know best. Until one day, just basically out of frustration, giving up, a beautiful word, giving up, just let go. Oh, you're sleepy, be sleepy. What's wrong with being sleepy? And so you were sleepy, but because I let it go, I wasn't wasting the little energy I had. The energy started to come back again. It was like waking up. It was like the result of having a cup of coffee, but without any coffee going into my body. Just the energy started to wake up. The mindfulness started to increase again. And it's times like that you realized that my mistake, I was fighting, wasting energy, instead of just letting it be and making peace. That was always the fastest way to get out of that tiredness. And it was important. It's a waste of time trying to watch the breath. You just have to hold it and fight it. Instead, you just let things be. And to this day, I say, wait till the breath comes to you. Don't go forcing it. And you only have to look in this basic teachings of breath meditation in Anapanasati Sutta. You find a quiet place, and then you establish mindfulness as a priority. What does it mean by establishing mindfulness as a priority? Again, something which not enough teachers focus on. Yeah, be mindful, but how do you establish, how did you develop, how do you get that mindfulness and get it very strong inside of you? And all the years which I've been practicing, I know so well that you have to learn how to be still, not do stuff. Let the mental energy start to really flow. And when it does, you do feel awake. Your mindfulness is there, and it can actually see, it can know, it can feel. And for me, that is just always a preliminary part of any meditation or even any range retreat, to give it time to establish mindfulness first of all. And what that means is to be able to have a powerful mind which can actually see things clearly and can feel clearly. So you can actually feel your bodily sensations. You're not dull. You're not confused. You can see beautiful dawns or sunsets. You can go out for a walk and actually see the forest, see the bush, I mean really deeply. Much more than when you're working. You can notice there's a big difference there. And with it, the energy of your mind and its joy is increasing. That is important to develop that. It's a preliminary. And you don't develop that by watching your breath or scanning your body or doing walking meditation or whatever. You do that just by developing some fundamental stillness in your mind, by restraining the thoughts, restraining the activities, doing less, thinking less, talking less. When you restrain those activities which burn up energy, obviously you have more energy. That's why we have basic restraint. You feel much better afterwards. Mindfulness is stronger, more mental energy, more inner happiness. So I know what it's like when you're tired. You try and meditate, it's not working. You rest, you don't have a good rest. You're not alive, you're not in that beautiful peak. And all of you have done lots of meditation retreats, you know what I'm talking about. Those moments, those days when you're really aware and it is so easy, it's flowing. This is actually what we mean by mindfulness, establishing it as a priority, as a first thing, to get that straight away. And there's so many ways you can actually do that. And some of them are just using inspiration, even like listening to a talk. If it's some really good talk, it doesn't have to be my talk, any talk which you find really uplifting, inspiring, because when you're actually listening to a talk, you are actually being quite passive. You're not using your mind that much, unless you're arguing with whatever's being said. Really actually listening, drawing in, it's passive, and it does give you a boost of energy. And if it's inspiring as well, that really does uplift you. It's one of the reasons why in just the Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta, which we just chanted, you know, they had Anya Kondanya became a stream winner during that talk. He was listening, he was passive, but his mindfulness must have really grown up because really inspiring, having the Buddha giving a talk. Inspiration, stillness, being passive, his mindfulness got so strong, he could actually break through and see their stomach. So this can be what happens. Whatever it is which gives you a peaceful, calm, pleasant abiding. And that can also be just, again, going for a walk in the afternoon, as long as it's not just thinking about all the plans, where you're going to go after the rains, what you're going to do, your biography, working out the meaning of life. All that thinking stuff is a waste of time. That draws down the energy of your mindfulness and eventually just makes you quite dull. So don't do that sort of stuff. Just restrain the senses. Restrain the thinking. And when it comes to all the problems of the past and the future, who said what, who did what, I've been a monk for so long that just really bores me. But he said this, but he did that, he promised he would do something else. Come on, that's all gone, it's finished. For goodness sake, let that go. You don't need that sort of stuff. And the only way to let that stuff go is not to have a monastery with perfect monks and perfect nuns. In all the years where I've lived, I've never found a monastery with perfect monks and perfect nuns. Even when I had that one range retreat I spent by myself, still I wasn't with a perfect monk. So there ain't such things. So the only thing is you can let all of that go. Don't waste your energy, your mindfulness on that sort of stuff. Learn how to restrain, let go. And as for the future, who knows what's going to happen later on, next week, next month, next year. For goodness sake, don't waste your time while you're here. You only have this moment. It goes so fast. We're just 1 week already gone. How many more weeks are there? It won't be that long. You'll be sitting here and we'll be doing the Pawarana ceremony. It is, you know how fast it goes. So you haven't got time to waste. Make sure you really get it together to restrain the past and restrain the future, restrain your thoughts. And then the energy starts to become strong. And then you do have the mindfulness. And once you've done this basic restraint and you have the mindfulness, then you find meditation is fun and easy. That's why sometimes people say, oh, meditation is so difficult. Oh, meditation is so hard. All day to meditate, how can you do that? I'm really bored. It's because you haven't got the fundamentals right at the beginning. You haven't developed your mindfulness. Because when your mindfulness is strong, one day is not enough. to meditate. Can you please have another hour, 25 hours today, please, 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 please? Because you have this clarity of mind. And when you have the clarity of mind, you just that enough just to get going. That clarity of mind allows you to be more still, but don't waste it with effort, for goodness sake. If you have clarity of mind and you use effort, you're just wasting it. And you go back to square one, you get tired. And when you get tired, you get bored and negative and grumpy again. Now, when you do have that energy of mind, preserve it. Keep it still. Use that mindfulness, the clarity, the power you have, to restrain the mind even more. Restraining it is not an effort, it's just a saying, no, don't want to think, waste of time. Spend all my life thinking, all my life planning, all my life going through the past, all my life complaining about this and complaining about that. Where's it ever got me? Nowhere. Anytime you complain about something, so they complain about you back. It is karma, it just goes round and round, and just living in a world of negativity is just must be so painful. So instead of that, we restrain those thoughts until we are so calm and energized that our mindfulness can actually sit down and it can watch our body to start off with. Simple kaya gata sati, the mindfulness of the body. Really important, because if you haven't got a comfortable body, you're not going to get a deep meditation. If you want to get really into the meditation, you have to sit many hours every day. And if you're going to sit many hours every day, many people get so sore. Sore knees, sore back, sore bum, sore anything. And so to get some really good meditation going, you have to put in the hours. Just half an hour a day is not going to get you very far. That's why we have a range retreat. We have from the early morning. You can come to breakfast if you want to. You don't have to. You just get some breakfast and just quickly eat it and go back to meditate. The lunch, yeah, that takes a bit of a while. But many of you, you take your food, and after got the food in the bowl and given the blessing, you're off back into your huts. Don't need to see you until the following day. You've got so many hours for yourself, in solitude. So you should have enough time there to really put many, many hours of sitting meditation. And when you're not sitting, walking meditation. Because if you put in the hours, you're going to get results. Because you are relaxing the mind, you're restraining it, you're not doing stuff. Your energies, your meditation starts to become more powerful. Yeah, it gets a bit boring to begin with, but once you get over that tiredness part and the mindfulness is strong, then you can look at your body and you can see exactly where you need to relax this, adjust this, put a bit more effort into something. I was in one of those retreats. I was telling the story probably last week, I don't know. But telling the story that when I was a young monk in Thailand, here we go, when I was a young monk in Thailand story. Because we wouldn't have any shoes, they were always falling apart, we couldn't get any new ones. We were spending most of the time without any shoes on at all in the forest, walking around all over the place. And whenever there was a little root coming up, we would step on it and cut our feet. We'd stub our toes. And so most of us Western monks, the first year I was there, we always had Band-Aids all over our feet, maybe five or six at a time. And when Ajahn Chah saw us, not just one, just a whole lot of us, and that's when he said, what on earth is going on? Because no Thai monks had those Band-Aids. They didn't step on the roots. They didn't stub their feet on a rock. They actually saw the rock and walked over it. And that's why Ajahn Chah said, you Westerners have got stupid feet. And I love that sort of metaphor, stupid feet, and how true that was. because I was too busy contemplating dependent origination when my mindfulness, my wisdom should have been in my feet. See what my foot was doing. So this was where I learnt the importance of being aware of your body. And there are too many of you in this monastery who are sick. Why is that? One of the reasons is because you're not aware enough of your body. So sometimes you injure it. Sometimes you don't look after it. Just like I had stupid feet, some of you got stupid guts. You're not looking after your guts. You got, I don't know what else you got, stupid this, stupid that. But you have to be mindful and aware of your body. And if I am healthy and I don't get sick that much, it is because I'm very aware. I've trained myself. That's one of the benefits of being a monk for such a long time. I am aware of my body and what's going on in it and how it works. And I've told many of the monks many times some of the stories, what I've gone and done and actually been up to, and just how you can just solve all many of these problems. You know, sicknesses, being sick, was it the food poisoning, all this sorts of stuff, colds. You can take a cold. Well, that story, just the most recent one, just last February, going off to Korea to give a series of talks for Venerable Gaksan. And that was cold. That was minus 15 degrees outside. So that was cold. And pretty strong. And woke up one morning sneezing. And I know my body. I'm aware enough that was a cold. It was not hay fever. This was in Korea. Over here, it's mostly if I sneeze, it's hay fever. It's allergies. But over this was a cold. And I'm aware enough of my body, I know what's going to happen next. Sneezing, sneezing, sneezing. Eventually the sneeze would go to my throat and start coughing. But my problem was I couldn't, like many of you, just, okay, take a day off and take a rest. I had a huge program that day, you know, in front of the national TV cameras. We were having an interview and a Dhamma talk translated into Korean in front of, was it 1,200, 1,500 people in the hall, and that was broadcast. A couple of TV channels were there. And if you've ever tried to give a talk with a cold, you know, it's really impossible. And you can't cancel. So, I know what to do. You know how to be so aware of your body, really aware of it, your nose. So it's not just, you know, the snot coming out, just to feel all the different little muscles there and just how they are irritating, how they're tensing up, how they're overreacting to whatever's going on there. And really focus on them with really strong mindfulness and just basically just ease away the whole cold. Until half an hour, it was absolutely gone. And I remember just afterwards, I had to go and visit, because Ajahn Gunhar had arrived the night before, go and visit him, say hello to him, and then go off to somewhere else to give another talk and spend all day. Just really a tiring schedule, but lots of energy. I know how to do that. And this is teaching you how to do this, to be aware of your body. Really aware of it. And find out where in that body is the problem. And be so aware of it, you can actually feel the problem. I can feel the body. You're in the body, you know it so well. And then you're wise. You haven't got a stupid tummy anymore. You've got a wise tummy, so you don't keep injuring it. And if it is injured, you know how to relax it and let all the problem disappear and go. And that's helped me so often get me out of really big problems. You know, trying to perform. You say, well, okay, so you don't actually give a talk, you're sick. But look, you think of someone like Venerable Gaksan, he put tens of thousands of dollars arranging all of this. And if I let him down, I'd feel terrible about that. But it's not your fault. Yes, not my fault. But as a monk, I can do something and actually have a very wise body. So with my mindfulness, I can overcome these things. And so this is actually what I've learned and what I'm trying to get each one of you to do as well, is be so mindful of your body so you can actually move it and look after it and just change this and change that so that your body can be pretty healthy, much more healthier than it is at the moment. So where do you get that mindfulness? I do this every time I sit down and meditate, aware of your body, first of all. Because I like meditating for 2 or 3 hours. And I'm getting old now. I should not be able to, at my age, a Westerner, to be able to sit cross-legged like this for a long period of time without aches and pains. I did have a bad back once many years ago. And actually never had any operations or anything, it just went away. Bit of mindfulness, bit of meditation. But don't have any aches and pains, because when I start meditating, I really look at my body and make sure everything is just right. I really am careful with the way I sit. And sometimes I don't actually sit in a regular posture, but I feel it, what it needs right now in this particular meditation. I'm not going to follow all the books about how you're supposed to meditate. You don't follow what other people say. You find out for yourself. Totally aware of your body, how it's feeling, what it needs. And so you do this. I focus on a part of my body, especially if it's irritating, and I stay with it until it's all relaxed, until the irritation is gone, until the pain has just vanished and disappeared. And you don't realize how much control you can have over your own body with a little bit of mindfulness and some wisdom attached. It's amazing what you can do. And I'm still amazed sometimes some of the stuff which I can do with my body. It's wonderful, it's incredible, because I learned from having stupid feet how to have smart feet and having smart other parts of my body as well. So when actually you can get that smartness in your body, you can relax parts of the body at will. You can relax. I'm relaxing my liver now. It's working. Just imagine it, focus on it, be aware of it, and you relax it. I call it relaxing because it feels like easy afterwards. So I start that with my meditation. And what that does is it relaxes things and it gives greater mindfulness and awareness before I even begin. And so I know that once my body is just been relaxed fully, then I know I can actually sit for long periods of time. I don't need to move. There's not going to be, very rarely, there's going to be any sort of irritation there, because I prepared it really, really well. And if there is an irritation comes up, I can just go to it straight away and just zap it. I like the word zapping it, because that's what it feels like. You just look at it and zap it away. I remember one of the first times, it was amazing the memory you have of some of the wonderful meditations you had. One of the times, it was actually on my birthday. I remember my 4th range retreat. My birth had a really great meditation that night, about 5 hours meditating, I think, and just after about 3 or 4 hours, your knee began to hurt. It's obvious. I was only 4 years as a monk. No cushions like we have over here in Thailand. I think about 3 or 4 hours. And all I did was look at it, zap. And all the pain went immediately. It's powerful. What we can do with your mind is immense. And don't think that I was born on Mars, okay? I was born in London. So, I'm just an ordinary guy. So don't think that, it's okay for him, but the rest of us, we've got to. No, this is ways and means where you can follow. So not only do you have the opportunity to have a really comfortable, healthy body, it means you can, the body's not a problem to you, so you can really meditate a long period of time and really get into it. And then you can just start to watch your breath. Now, because I know that sometimes I say the breath comes to you, If you've been skilled at this meditation, fine. But some of you, if you don't watch something pretty quickly, you start thinking and fantasizing and dreaming and planning. So it's really important actually to focus on something if you can't just be still naturally. Me, I just focus on the mind, just really relax the mind. You can feel the mind. Because you've been doing this a long time, people say, well, what do you mean, feel the mind? What are you actually watching? I'm watching the mind, but what is that? If you've been doing it as long as I've been doing it, you know it's just as clear to you, the mind is as clear to you as just you open your eyes and see the brick wall. Because you've recognized it. You've developed your perception of this thing we call the mind. You know it. And recently, you know, just trying to find skillful means so people understand what I'm talking about is sometimes I did this, I think, to one of the Indonesian visitors today. Oh, no, I think it was somebody yesterday. I asked them, I said, well, you know, just if you can give a number, how peaceful is your mind right now? Give it from 1 to 10. 5, 6, 7, how peaceful is your mind? Actually, it was one of the people staying here. And they said, oh, 6 or 7. I said, well, great. A little test. You've looked at your mind and you've given it a number, how peaceful it is. You are mindful of something. You're actually watching your mind, and especially that aspect, that particular of your mind, how peaceful or how agitated it is, enough to give it a number. So can you notice what it's like when your mind is only number 3, it's pretty restless, or number 1, or minus 1, or minus 1,000, you're really all over the place. And what causes the restlessness, and what causes that number to rise to number 7 or number 8? My mind is really peaceful. It's just a skillful means so you can become more aware of what we mean by peace of mind. Simple thing. So how much peace of mind have you got? If you don't focus on that to begin with, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it means you start meditating, you start thinking all over the place. Because you haven't done the fundamentals, the basics. So just get that peace pretty high, 7, 8, or 9, whatever it is. Focus on that first of all. Be mindful of that. And then you find the mind is not thinking that much. It's easy when you know what you're doing. When you don't know what you're doing, my whole point of me being a teacher is I've been there, I've done this. These are all the tricks which I've learned and I'm trying to share them with you. So learn how to relax the mind, make it peaceful. So there's no thoughts going on. The force of that thinking mind, that restlessness, has been so subdued that the mind is pretty peaceful. And then it's easy to meditate. So you do that first of all. And then you can start watching the breath, and it's easy. Watch the breath go in, breath go out, breath go in, breath go out, because you're pretty peaceful. If you're all agitated to begin with, you've got lots of worries, concerns, problems, anger, guilt, whatever it is you have, then that is going to make it so difficult. And what most people do, then they use the will to try and force their mind onto the breath. And oh, that causes so much problems for people meditating. You won't win. You will lose. So in the end, we use our wisdom power, as I've been saying for years. Learn how to look at that mind, relax it, rest it, and then you can actually start seeing this breath. And because you are reasonably still, your mindfulness is clear and bright enough, you can actually watch the breath. It's not just breathing in, breathing out. It's incredible, just one breath, how much there is to watch. Just like I say, you know, Westerners had stupid feet, because I wasn't aware of my feet at all. They're just too far away. They were not important. And growing up in a place like England, they would always had boots on them or football boots or Wellingtons or something. I didn't need to be aware of my feet until we went to Thailand. And I soon learnt the hard way. Now, when you're not a monk or a nun, you don't need to be aware of your breath. But if you're a meditator, you've got to learn how to be aware of it. So you get this mindfulness, this awareness of this breath over the years. You really get to know it. Just like I really get to know my feet, how I get to know my nose, how I get to know my breath. And so when you start watching it, it's easy to watch and it is fascinating to watch as well. So when it's easy and fascinating because you've got enough mindfulness to begin with, you find the breath meditation is a wonderful way you can spend hours just happy. And it's not a burden and it's not a disappointment. You know, oh gee, I've got to watch this breath. And you spend most of the time just, you know, getting negative, getting depressed, getting upset, thinking you can't do this. As far as I'm concerned, everybody can meditate beautifully, deeply. They can only find out how it works. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just, you've got to find out, tweak it until you get enough wisdom, smart, just like I had to be smart so I didn't have to keep putting band-aids on my feet, on my toes anymore. You soon learn that. So you could walk through the forest like a tiger without a scratch. Same with walking through meditation, getting some beautiful states of meditation. So you get aware of this thing called the breath. And you're aware of it, if you have sufficient, the basic awareness coming up, whatever you watch is delightful. Sunsets are gorgeous. I don't see many sunsets from my kuti, but the dawn's incredible. See the dawns as you walk down for the breakfast. I love this time. I know during the end of the range retreat, when I teach the retreat for the Singaporeans, I actually look forward to that, getting up early and just walking over, sleeping overnight in my cave and walking over early in the morning, 3 or 4 o'clock, and just watching the dawn come up on Kingsby Drive. That's gorgeous. I look forward to that because it's a beautiful time of the day. No one is around at all. Maybe if there's any prisoners escaping, that'd be the only people you might see. No one else around at that time. But anyway, that you get this beautiful same sort of feeling when you're watching the breath. Your awareness is strong. And then it's easy to watch. It's delightful. It's beautiful. And this is where you really get into the meditation. Once you get delight coming up, always call it the pivot point of meditation, the tipping point. Get that going and then you're sweet for the whole range retreat. You watch the breath, it's delightful. Just sitting there, just watching a breath. And be careful, don't want anything more. Think, wow, now I'm meditating. Right, come on, nimittas, jhanas, psychic powers, enlightenment, at least streaming, come on. I don't know how many times people blow it. Because you get to a certain point by following the instructions, and then once you get, you think, now I can meditate. Now I can meditate, you take control and you stuff up. So if that's happening, you've got some beautiful experiences in meditation, you're just watching the breath and it's delightful, that is enough. Stop wanting more. Stop messing up. So you just, if you follow the instructions, you've got this beautiful breath, you're just watching it, that's enough for me, I don't want any more. Just this is good enough. I can spend the whole day just watching this breath. Nimittas, yeah, some other time, thank you. Jhanas, oh yeah, maybe, but not me. And if that's the attitude you have, of just being content, letting go, no desire, not exercising your will. If you have this in your head, hopefully, number of times I've said it, it must be pretty brainwashed now, I hope, that you're just watching this breath. And you're just watching a breath go in, watching a breath go out. And just, because you don't want anything, you're not doing anything, the mindfulness increases. With it, the delight. With it, the amount of the breath you can see. You can see deeper and deeper into it. And it takes off. It's a snowball effect. You don't do anything. Just the delight means stronger mindfulness, the mindfulness means stronger stillness. Stillness, delight, mindfulness, joy, bliss, it just grows. That's where nimittas come from. Just an explosion of pitti-sukha. Just great mindfulness. Sometimes people ask, is the nimitta, you have to see the nimitta. Look, the nimitta is always there. It's whether you're aware enough to see it, whether your mindfulness is strong enough, whether it needs a bit more stillness to give it a bit more oomph and power. And that's what you do. Get that mindfulness really, really powerful and strong by restraining the mind, not doing things, stillness. Stillness is the cause of strong mindfulness. Strong mindfulness creates even deeper stillness. Works together. And you come into the heart of this path. Reason why we've got a monastery, why I am teaching, why I come every year and teach the same old stuff, hopefully that one year somebody will actually follow the instructions and crack it and really get into something. Because with that stillness, that mindfulness, stronger and stronger, more happiness, more joy, the breath becomes incredible. I mean, really beautiful stuff. You're enjoying this meditation. Things are happening and have a wonderful time. And then brilliant lights coming up. Wow, and just they take you over. You don't do anything. Every time you do something, they disappear again. And it becomes not just something you can avoid, but something which just really keeps recurring, coming back again, stronger and stronger. And you feel like a monk. You really feel like a bhikkhuni. You got deep meditation. You're enjoying it. You're a meditator. It's not something you just do because, oh, I think I have to. Oh, I suppose I'd better do some meditation. I've got to go and teach somebody next week. No, you do this because this is your life. This is your joy. This is your skill. This is what you go into, just like soccer players just love getting on the field and kicking a ball about. Just like musicians, they can't wait to get into an orchestra and to start really playing something. And meditators can't wait to get and sit down, close their eyes, and start really enjoying jamming with the nimitta. Brilliant stuff. And you do this, and you feel like a monk. And of course, you know, just I can't hold you back, no one else can hold you back. Mara becomes stuff when you get to that sort of stage. You're really getting some energy going, some bliss, and you sit for hours. And you just wait, always in the present moment. Never wait in the future, two types of waiting. Waiting in the future is waiting for something to happen, that's craving, that's wanting. Waiting in the moment is being content, this is good enough for me. And then that contentment is so powerful. So easy to be content when you're blissing out. But for some people, they still want more. So when you're really content, blissing out, it just builds and builds and builds by itself. You don't stop it. You can't encourage it. The only thing you can do is mess up. That's why the sooner you disappear, the less likelihood is anything being messed up. What was it? I said this on retreats. This was a simile. I do actually get some wisdom from all my flying around because I was flying somewhere and it was the airline. It was Air Asia. I don't always travel business class on Singapore Airlines. Sometimes I slum it. There was no slumming. Air Asia somewhere. And just picking up the... You know, they always have this in-flight magazine. You know, a bit bored, I must admit, I was bored. Just looking at what's in here. It's usually really boring stuff. But they had a joke in there, one of the captains of the airline. And that was where he's saying, the airline of the future. Just like Google cars, totally automatic. And he said, in the cockpit. They still have a cockpit. But in the cockpit, there'd just be two beings. The pilot and a dog. the only two people in the cockpit. And the job of the pilot, the only job the pilot has is to feed the dog. And the purpose of the dog is to bite the pilot if he touches anything. And that was the aircraft of the future, and written by a pilot, because it's so automatic. And the problem was, people, automatic things work very well, but human beings always tend to try and interfere. And when I heard that, it was not just a good joke, I thought, wow, I can use that for meditation. Because if I could somehow get a dog and put it inside your mind with the instructions, bite him, bite that nun, bite that monk, if you do anything with the nimitta, keep your hands off the nimitta, okay? Then you get jhanas really quickly. So you can see the point there. You just need to be more still, more peaceful, more doing nothing. Let the energies build. It takes time. But who cares? You're having such a good time anyway. I don't care. Just get really nice, sweet nimittas. I know, that's enough for the whole range retreat. Just a beautiful nimitta. Just one beautiful nimitta. Wow, that's great. Satisfies you. So why do you want any more? When you don't want any more, that's when you get more. Big time more. So you get these jhanas. They just come. Blow you away. And you think, wow, I got a jhana. And then hopefully that dog bites you. Say, no, you did not. You disappeared. And that's why the jhana could come in and visit you. They can only come into empty houses, jhanas. If there's a resident in there, you, they will never come through the door. You have to be an empty house for a jhana to come in. No wanting, no sense of self. But then afterwards, you understand huge amounts of Dhamma. Look, you know, you read about this. I talk about this so much. Wouldn't you like to have an idea what I'm talking about? Have an experience? Have an Uttari Manusa Dhamma during this range retreat? That'd be really cool, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be just, wow, what a great range retreat. The range retreat when the first jhana visited me. Ooh, that's neat. So that's how it's done. From the very simple beginnings, just learning how to get some more seclusion, restrain the speech, restrain the thoughts, do less, create stronger mindfulness of the body first of all. Really relax this body so it can sit down for a long time to give it the time necessary. Even if you lay down, but just don't go to sleep. Find a nice place where you can have solitude and comfort and have enough mindfulness. Grow it until it's very clear and bright. So the forest looks absolutely gorgeous. I've been living in this forest for 33 years. It never looks as gorgeous as when your mindfulness is getting strong during a good retreat. Absolutely amazing. And don't think, yeah, I know that. No, you don't. You've got a really strong mindfulness. So happy. No one can upset you because you've got too much energy. And then take it deeper. Get into this breath. Just be with the breath, so beautiful, so easy, effortless. And then see what happens next. So that's what I wish for you during this retreat. I'm just giving you some, hopefully some encouragement and some advice on how it is done. Very good.
Avaham Sammasambuddho. Suakato
Bhagavata Namo Dhammana Sang
Supatipanno
Bhagavata.